As promised earlier, today we're going to do this ultimate reality in Madhyamaka philosophy in relation to what we did of the single and different, one of the topics in Sutrantika school. So I told you that that topic is much more like the gateway, the first gateway into introducing the teaching of emptiness in the Madhyamaka system or Prasangika system. So although there are various other steps like Chittamatra, Swatantra Madhyamaka and so forth, but we see that this teaching on the single and difference in Sutrantika, this is the main gate. From there, then you will come to know that our ordinary ways of thinking needs to be transcended in order to understand the ultimate reality, because of which, through which, we can expect to achieve liberation for oneself and all other sentient beings. And from what we're going to read of the first leaf, we'll come to know the importance of this teaching on emptiness, number one. And number two, we need, in order for one to be really very serious with such a profound teaching, we should know the benefit of these teachings. Number one, only when one sees the benefit of these teachings, then one will truly start cherishing it. So that's really very important. And say sometimes you feel a little bit cross, you feel a little bit low-spirited and sad for whatever reason, and then simply think about emptiness. And again, before delving into emptiness, read those passages which explain the marvelous benefit of the practice of these teachings, right? So then your mind will immediately be uplifted, and then you will find, there is no point for one to feel discouraged, and low-spirited and low, no point, and there's no reason, because every moment should be thought of in the light of great hope, great worth. Because, simply look at the study of the teachings which explain about the benefit of these wonderful, profound views. Number one. Number two, then we are to really delve into these teachings. After recalling the benefit of these teachings, then we have to really delve into it. So for that, of course, there are various ways of delving into the practice of Madhyamaka or the Middle Way view, emptiness view. Then, what I'm going to teach, the second leaf, that's going to be more philosophical and also very refined, very precise and very refined. Usually, there are, as I said earlier, out of the different ways of leading someone into the practice of emptiness, they are very easy ones. But the danger is that if you simply hold on to a very small, narrow way of meditating on emptiness, then we don't know where this practice is going to lead us. It can simply lead to a very gross level of understanding of selflessness. Because selflessness is not just a solid, monolithic kind of identity. It has various levels. So because of which, you may be caught up in just a small, very narrow, coarse level of understanding of selflessness. And then you might think that this is the whole world of emptiness. But not. You're deceived. However, if you try to integrate, intertwine your understanding of your whatever practice that you do regularly. So if you intertwine that with what is said by Lama Tsongkhapa, which we're going to study together, from there on the second leaf, if you try to intertwine the two, you know, of course, it's quite challenging at outset. So this is our job that we need to do. We need to intertwine the two. And then gradually, you know, then what is set forth, very systematic, you know, very profound, systematic, broad way of establishing emptiness that will then become your own, you know, your own setup of the understanding of emptiness. So then the danger of falling to simply, you know, getting trapped in a small understanding of emptiness that will be evaded, right? So this is really very important. So it usually when I do some kind of discussion or teaching, you know, this topic to youngsters, I always recommend people to memorize this small bit, you know. So to make sure that even without this leaf, we can simply recall what is said there. And then, if you simply try to put that in the form of points, then again the danger is that you might miss some of them. So to be on the safe side, we memorize. It's just one page, right? So memorize in the sense, you may not necessarily do everything in just one day. Make sure that you at least read this, you know, page once or twice a day by reflecting. And then try to do your daily meditation by means of incorporating these. So that's really very, you know, profound, a very wise way of handling, very wise way of, you know, meditating on emptiness. Okay, one thing. Then, the second thing, the next thing to do is, it'll be stated here, is to then come to try to know in what way this practice is going to be of benefit to you. Your goal, so everyone here, you know, every one of us here in this abbey, really, you know, someone who's really dedicated towards seeking some benefit and meaning out of this life, so that there's a brighter future, not only for oneself, but for all sentient beings as well. So if that is the case, then what is the real connection between the understanding of emptiness and the goal that you're seeking? That should be really very clear, right? One thing. The another thing is that since this, the study a reflection on emptiness and the intended goal that we wish to achieve, you know, to make the connection and to finally achieve the goal is going to take a bit of time, meaning not just, you know, a few hours, like a few years, who knows, it might take, you know, few lifetimes, even more in some cases, we don't know, several hundred thousands or some eons like that. So in that case, you know, the teaching that we have obtained this time, how are we going to make sure that this teaching, you know, is what you are going to encounter in the future lifetimes as well? This is another very important thing, right? For that, I've included the last passage in the first leaf. Okay, and then finally, as to how to really, you know, practice, so that is in the second leaf. So this is how our discussion or the class is going to be set up. Actually, the very style of teaching adopted by all the great Indian masters, Buddhist masters, is by first of all citing the benefits of the study that one is, you know, one is to undertake. For example, if you look at Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, the first chapter is simply the benefit of cultivating the the altruistic intention of bodhicitta, you know. So by seeing all the benefits, then the sense of desire to practice this, desire to cultivate or generate this, will become so strong in oneself. So with that, then when you really delve into it, then there is no pain. Then you won't have a sense of pain or hardship. You know, with joy you will then handle, or you will study, reflect and meditate. Right? Okay. So now, the benefit. Let's see how beneficial it is to study and reflect and meditate on emptiness, and how much value should we be able to give to this teaching. First, is the word of salutation to Buddha Shakyamuni by Arinagarjuna in his Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way. So here, Buddha Shakyamuni, he appeared on this earth 2,600 years ago. And before him, there were already lots of teachers, but he came as so outstanding. As well, for, in what way his teaching is so outstanding? So this is very clearly reflected in all the words of salutations put forth by Aranyakarjuna. So one of the most common and famous one is what I cited here. In the Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, he says, "Enthused by great compassion, you taught the immaculate teaching. In order to eliminate all wrong views, to you, the Buddha Gautama, I prostrate." So this, in fact, if you can take this, take something from this, it embodies the whole body of the teaching of Buddhism. Because you see, enthused by great compassion, this is the motivating drive for the Buddha giving all these teachings. So this is, all these teachings come out of from his great compassion, from bodhicitta, from this immaculate desire to benefit all sentient beings. So this is the meta side of the path. And then you taught the immaculate teaching. Immaculate meaning which is so pure. Pure in the sense which is not at all tainted by any defilements or any faults. So then what is the opposite of that? In order to eliminate all wrong views. So wrong views, they embody the tainted side or the defiled sides. And whereas to eliminate that, then we have the immaculate teaching, the teaching given by the Buddha. So why should we eliminate the wrong views, and why should we follow the immaculate teaching? So it is very simple. It is for the very simple reason that we all, whether oneself or others, including a tiny insect, so look at how the tiny insects, they behave. Say, if they, you know, say, for example, a bee, or bee, if there is honey or the nectar, immediately it'll go towards that. And if you try to disturb it, immediately it'll withdraw. So this indicates that, you know, when there's nectar, it's drawn towards it because of the desire for happiness, knowing that by partaking in that nectar, one will be happy. And then when someone tries to disturb it, immediately it will withdraw, knowing, sensing a danger, which means that, oh, I don't like to have this danger, I don't like to experience suffering. So there's an innate desire for happiness and not wanting suffering. So this is our basic nature, oneself, all others, including the tiny insects. So this being our nature, our goal then should be according to that. So what is that goal? To put it in a wise way, it is the lasting happiness, the happiness which we seek to the greatest extent. What is that? Lasting happiness. And what do you want to avert is suffering, averting suffering altogether, completely. So this should be our goal. And then you extend this to all other sentient beings, right? Okay, so the Buddha said that all these problems or desire, all these suffering, and which in other words, all these suffering that you dislike, which come in the way to achieving the ultimate happiness, you know, this is all rooted to the wrong views, the mistaken views, or the ignorance. And this ignorance can be eliminated only by shedding the light of wisdom. What is that light of wisdom? It's the immaculate teaching of the Buddha, the teaching on dependent origination and emptiness. So for this reason, Aranyagarjuna said, "To you, the Buddha Gautama, I prostrate." So Aranyagarjuna, he submitted himself to Buddha simply because the Buddha taught this wonderful teaching on emptiness and dependent origination to avert all perverted views so that happiness, lasting happiness for oneself and all other beings can be accomplished. Okay, so we see that, you know, this really truly embodies the whole body of the teaching of the Buddha and then informs us as to how important it is to cultivate the wisdom of emptiness. And next, it is the Buddha's own teaching, given by the precious Chan Sutra. This is the whole name of the sutra. Manjushri, whoever listens, even with doubt, to this rendition of the teaching referring to the teaching of emptiness, generates much greater positive potential than a bodhisattva who, lacking skill in means, practices the sixth perfection for 100,000 eons. This being so, what need is there to say anything about a person who listens without doubt? What need is there to say anything about a person who imparts the scripture in writing, memorizes it, and also teaches it thoroughly and extensively to others? So we see that, say the bodhisattvas, those bodhisattvas who are not skilled in the sense of not having the understanding of emptiness, and then putting so much of effort wholeheartedly in the practices of six professions, you know, generosity and the ethical, the observing ethical discipline, then the practice of patience, the practice of enthusiasm, the practice of samadhi, practice of wisdom. So the wisdom could be a wisdom of impermanence and so forth. So however much they may do, but you as a very beginner, very basic, ordinary being, if you, with the sense of doubt, you know, with a sense of wonder as to what could emptiness really look like? What is it? What does it really look like? Or what does it really sound like? So with that kind of feeling, you simply try to study this. Then the amount of merit that one accumulates far excels that of these bodhisattvas who, you know, and delve into the practice of six perfections with so much of effort, and that too in terms of the time, eons and eons. So now look, but again, of course, there are a lot more to say about how this is really true, how much this is true, you know, about of what the Buddha said. Of course, this can be so convincingly explained, but because of the lack of time, I'm simply going to go through it. But anyway, this is what the Buddha said, and of course it has, you know, a logical, rational reasoning behind to support this. Then, next, the treasury of the One Thus Gone Sutra. A living being who possessing all these 10 great non-virtues enters 10 great non-virtues, the negative karmas, enters into the doctrine of selflessness. So actually say, someone who is endowed with all these non-virtuous actions, karma. So what is the person's destiny? No doubt in hell being, in hell realm. So now look, even that person, if he enters into the doctrine of selflessness and has faith and belief that all phenomena are from the beginning pure, meaning from the beginningless, you know, everything is lacking, is pure of inherent existence. Pure in the sense of, you know, pure, devoid of inherent existence, does not go to a bad rebirth. Right? So, this is a kind of benefit. And chapter on subduing devils, again sutra, it says, if any bhikshu realizes, it's simply not confined to bhikshus, you know, and we shouldn't worry about it, you know. It is applicable to all others as well. Why the Buddha is addressing to the bhikshus here, you know, is because it was a congregation of the bhikshus, right? So don't think that, oh, I see, this is only for the bhikshus, not for us. So if any bhikshu realizes that all phenomena are absolutely pacified, again, absolutely connotes, no degree, nothing existing inherently, nothing existing objectively, absolutely mental imputation, absolutely pacified, and the beginning of defilements is devoid of self-nature. Say, a person, who has accumulated so much of defilements, and then, because of, one's own kind of, karmic connection, or because of the kindness of a teacher, or because of one's, very strong regret over the negative it has accumulated, and then wanted to study about, having heard about the benefit of emptiness, and then you study about emptiness. So then what happens is that you reflect as how the defilement that you are with, the negativities that you have accumulated, how even these negativities, in true sense, they lack true existence. They don't exist independently. They don't have inherent nature. So once you know that, then what will happen? It says, it will remove the guilt of having defilements. Meaning, so actually what happens is that that understanding really purifies your negativities, your defilements. So this means that you have no more of the defilements, because of which you don't have to have the guilt. So it will remove the guilt of having defilements and make the defilements unstable. Meaning, what is the purpose, what is the function of defilements? It is to drench us in samsara. It is to drench us, entangle in samsara, suffer in hell realm, hungry ghost realm, sickness, death, and so forth. So now these functions of defilements, they become unstable because of, they become unstable in the sense they cannot really function anymore. They become dysfunctional because of your having reflected on emptiness. Okay, now, let me continue this. This deems even the immeasurable negativities. Now look, immeasurable negativities referring to the worst of the negativities. They are counted five. Right? Immeasurable negativities, the worst of the negativities that, anyone could do in this entire universe, including killing, one's father, killing one's mother, then killing an arhat, right? And then creating dissension in a monastic community. And then, inducing blood from the Tathagata's body, with the intention to terminate the Buddha, So these are the five hideous negativities, no other negativities really are stronger than these five. So even if, say, one has accumulated one of these negativities, known as the immeasurable negativities, and because of this reflection and emptiness, it'll make the immeasurable negativities dysfunctional, right? Then let alone the secondary wrongs, then all other negativities, let alone the secondary wrongs done associated with ethics and rituals. Say someone has transgressed a little bit of ethics here and there, and also say you are to, in terms of the practice of Tantra, you are to assume such and such particular gestures and so forth, and then you are unable to, you just tend to miss that, or during your gathering you are supposed to attend it this way, not that way, and then again you miss that. So all these things, they become so small in the eyes of someone who has really gained insight or delved into emptiness with absolute faith, absolute conviction in it. So look, these are the kinds of the benefits of reflecting on emptiness. So if this is the case, if you ever come to hear about a particular object, you get a piece of paper, signed by someone, And then, wherever you go in the world, you know, you get free flight, you get free hotels, you get free everything. If you ever happen to get that, you know, who on earth will not really go for that? Right? So everybody will rush for that. And then, you know, if it is put on auction, everybody's going to give anything for that. Right? So similarly, this is the real thing. This is a true panacea, you know, to cure everything. So why not we delve into it with great joy? Right? And then Aryadeva's four other stanzas. He says, those with less merit will not even have a doubt in this dharma of ultimate reality. However, should a doubt ever arise in someone, it will shatter samsara into pieces. Look, they all simply go in the same line, right? So because, why is this so? So although I promised not to explain this, so I think it is quite important. Now look, so why? Because we see that the samsara, however evil, however strong, you know, however pervasive it might appear, it might, you know, be. But after all, that is simply grounded on the grasping of true existence. You know, all suffering, all manifestations of suffering, they're nothing but grounded on, they're all grounded on the negative karma. And all these karmas, they are in turn grounded on afflictions. Negative, distorted, or negative, the negative thoughts, you know, the disturbing emotions. And these disturbing emotions, they are finally rooted, grounded on the grasping of true existence. Right? So, if you are able to shake this single root cause, the grasping of true existence, then everything else is being shaken. You know, afflictions are shaken, negative karmas are shaken, and the whole body of samsara is shaken. So what is that thing which can trigger, which can really, you know, which can shake this grasping a true existence? It is the wisdom which understands the ultimate reality. Right? Say, the practice is meditating on impermanence, and say, meditating on samadhi, single-pointed meditation, for hours and hours, and there, right there in Mount Kailash, you know, with no clothes. Such a dedication. In snow, no clothes. And meditating in samadhi, simply being able to sustain by means of the meditation, you know, the life force of the samadhi practice. You do that. And you spend years and years there, you know. But it has no capacity to shake this root cause of the, you know, all samsara. We simply stand on it. Similarly, likewise, you know, any other practice, of course it doesn't mean that all other practices are useless. It doesn't mean that. When you say the food is what helps you sustain your body, it doesn't mean that a cup is important. Cup is not food. And the bowl is not food. But they are required. But what really you take in is the food and not the cup and not the bowl. Right? So similarly, all other things, they are important. But what is that thing? What is the panacea like, you know? It is actually the wisdom which understands the emptiness. This shakes the final root cause of all the samsaric embodiments. So, now, look. Chandrakirti's entry into the middle way. Upon hearing about emptiness, even while being an ordinary being, whoever repeatedly gives rise to inner joy, and this joy brings tears that moisten the eyes, and the hairs of the body stand on end, in him or her is present the seed of wisdom of the perfect Buddhahood. Again referring to the teaching of emptiness, right? So, it may not be true in our case, but through reflecting on these points, then surely there's, a deep feeling of respect, deep feeling of cherishing and valuing this teaching of emptiness, right? So when that happens, this is indeed indication that one has the seed of wisdom of the perfect Buddhahood. Okay, and the second, the last bit, the Chandrakirti's entry into the middle way. Okay, so I'll complete this as well. So now, if this is a kind of benefit of emptiness, the state of emptiness, reflection and emptiness, and meditation and emptiness, and then, according to the second leaf, if that is the way how to meditate, reflect on emptiness, but what? Next life, you know? Is it possible that this treasure is what we can carry on with us continuously throughout our next lives? What is there any, you know, what if that becomes kind of dissociated, disconnected from you? You are separate from it, the next life. So then it's a great loss, right? So is there any means by which one can guarantee that this teaching will be always with you? So then R. H. Chandrakirti, in his text, Entry into the Middle Way, he said, the last stanza, they always abide in ethical disciplines. They engage in generosity, cultivate compassion, meditate on patience, and fully dedicate the virtues of these towards enlightenment for the sake of all liberating sentient beings. They respect the completed bodhisattvas. So what is this? In what way this stanza, you know, embodies or informs us as to how to guarantee ourselves to have this teaching all the time until you achieve full enlightenment. So, it is good if one can achieve enlightenment or Buddhahood within this single lifetime. It's good. But how many of us can really materialize that idea, right? So, it is better to go on the safe side, to go the safer side. So, let's say, oh, I'll try my best in this life. Right, I'll try my best, but then say I don't achieve full enlightenment within this lifetime. So then I have to continue the next life, right? So this means that I cannot stop myself from taking next life. So for that, what kinds of next lives are there? You know, animals, hell realms, hungry ghost realms, human realm, deva realms. So, but we don't know, you know, that whether I'm going to go in this category of, you know, the lower realms or the higher realm. In the lower realm, just think about the two cats here, you know, in Sravasti Abbey, the two cats. So however much Venerable Chaitanya gives teachings on emptiness and all these things, that cat simply, you know, lies there and don't really hear anything, understand anything, you know? And even if the whole teaching is just meant for that cat, even then, the cat will not appreciate that, will not really understand. So instead of that, better to say, in a very gentle tone, you know, whatever name it might be, say, cat, hey cat, you know, in a gentle tone you say it, the cat will feel happy. Instead of, oh, emptiness means this, you know? Oh, you are lacking any independent existence. You should know this. You're taking birth as a cat is because of the ignorance. It makes no sense, you know. It will not even give a sense of joy. Why? So this is a dullness. The dullness of the lower realms. So what? Next life, if we happen to take birth as a cat or a dog or, you know, mosquitoes, it's impossible that, you know, there's no way you can complain or sue. Last life, you know, I studied emptiness, so this life, why not I'm encountering? No, that's it, you're done. So, we have to make sure that we are protected from taking birth in the lower realms. So make sure that you take birth in the higher realms, human, preferably human, not devas, you know. So devas is really very dangerous. Unless and until one's understanding of emptiness is really firm already, and a bodhicitta is firm already, it's very dangerous, you know, their endeavor. Because you will be simply kind of, you know, distracted by all sensual wonders. In this connection, I think it is quite relevant to tell you a very short story, what happened to, you know, the most famous physician, you know, at the time of the Buddha, and he happened to be Arahat Shariputra's, one of the chief disciples, And when Shariputra, you know, happened to see Shariputra coming from far place, and he happened to be on a horse or on elephant, he would simply jump off out of respect, you know, to his teacher. So he dared to jump off, not even taking time to, you know, get off slowly, simply jumping off. This is the kind of the reverence that he has towards his teacher. And then one day he passed away, and Shariputra, through his clairvoyance, he was seeing as to where his student has taken birth. And then he came to realize that he has taken birth in the Deva realm. And Shariputra, with the warm-heartedness, you know, he went up through his clairvoyance to continue teaching to his student. And then he was, you know, in his monk's robes with the begging bowl on this, waiting on the roadside. And then, you know, this physician, maybe a divine, or the Deva girl or boy, you know. And then a group of Devas, boys and girls, they were in a chariot. They were riding. And the chariot passed by Shariputra. And then, you know, they were all simply, you know, distracted. They were all simply excited over their own, you know, the pleasures of Deva, you know. And then when they saw Shariputra, is it, you know, someone from this world? So when they compared their physical complexions and the physique and these things, oh, it's really not, you know, attractive. So being arahat, we should not be saying that it's unattractive. You know, what more attractive thing can we think of, rather than, you know, than arahat? But on the physical level, you know, they see in a very, you know, repulsive way. And then, no one was really looking at Shariputra. And they simply passed by Shariputra. And then, the one who is the, you know, the next life of that physician, Shariputra's student, he or she, I don't know, simply looked at Shariputra and then waved, hi, and then passed by. So, and that Deva, the next birth of, you know, the student of Shariputra, he or she happened to, you know, simply give a little bit of attention to Shariputra. That also is because of his previous, you know, the karmic connection with Shariputra in his previous life. You know, had it not been the case, he wouldn't even look at Shariputra. Simply intoxicated, you know, infatuated by what's really happening there within themselves. So this is the kind of thing happening in Deva realm. So this is really very dangerous. So simply forget about Dharma, you know. What is Dharma, you know? What is the use of Dharma? So this is the kind of attitude. So whereas, if you have a very strong background in the understanding of emptiness and bodhicitta and this already, renunciation these things already, then taking birth in Deva realm is quite okay. But for us, better not there. You know, better not there. Because, you know, to be billionaires and millionaires and to be so healthy and these things without any problems, they would hardly come to Abbey. Yeah. So this is unfortunate on this side. This is unfortunate on this side. Yeah. So now look, if this is the case in this world, then simply think of Deva realm, you know. How can you expect these people to practice Dharma? Right? So better don't think of taking birth in their realm. So better think of taking birth, you know, in human realm. Now the question is, it's not that, you know, somebody will simply tell you, oh, we are going to take birth. Human realm, go there. No, it's not like that. So it is in your own hand. You know, is how to do that. So we need to really accumulate the required conditions to take birth in the human realm. And what are the required conditions? And the Chandragiri says, they always abide in ethical disciplines. Observing sound ethical discipline is the root cause of taking birth, guaranteeing you to take birth in human realm or you know, their realm. So with that, then if you simply think of so strongly to take birth as human being rather than their realm, while abiding in ethical disciplines soundly, then because of this power of the prayer, you can truly take birth in the human being in the human realm rather than their realm. Number one. Number two, what? If you become so, you know, even if you take birth as a human being, but if you are born as so poor, you know, so poor, which means that you hardly have a dry bread to, you know, sustain yourself for that day. So then you will be so busy going after, you know, food and these things, the basic necessities. This means you will not get time for, you know, dharma. Oh, you should practice dharma. Because, you know, you're becoming poor and all these things is because of you're not having, you know, practicing dharma in your formal life. Well, forget about dharma, you know, it, my belly is the first. This is the response. Automatic, it's quite natural, you know. So, we should make sure that in terms of the basic facilities, you're all right. So that you don't have to worry about that, right? So for that, what to do? Again, is the karmic, natural law of karma, that these, the results that is, that you think of, you know, attaining, for that they are, you know, particular causes. So they are their own respective causes, which we need to cultivate. So what is the cause for that? Then it says, they engage in generosity, right, in this life. And then again, don't expect that, oh, now you're about to die. So now look, I'm going to decide where you take birth. So I have to observe the ethical discipline soundly. Say you are, it's just about 1 or 2 days to die, and then you start, then it will not really help. Because, you know, to say that I'm going to be a physics professor, and then on the last 2 days, you study so hard, it not help. So to become a physics professor, you have to really, you know, plan years and years and study, you know, so many years ahead of you become a professor. So similarly, it's the practice of generosity. And then cultivate compassion. So what? Say you have, you know, few billions of dollars. And then if you simply use that for, you know, your own enjoyment, like, you know, going for five-star hotels and simply in gambling and these things, what's the use? The benefit is so small. So instead, you can do so much of, you know, beneficial things. You think of constructing the whole Sarvati Abbey, you know, developing it, and give it to, you know, part of it to some charity, the organizations. You know, there are lots of wonderful things to be done with that amount of money, right? So whereas if you use that, the same amount, if you use that for just a small thing, what's this? What's foolish, right? So similarly, this wonderful teaching on emptiness, the wonderful practice of emptiness, is, you know, this is wonderful, but it can be used so, you know, in a selfish, in a so trivial way. While it has, in terms of the capacity, it can be, it can bring about a tremendous, incredible wonder for all the humanity, for all sentient beings. So, what is that thing which really directs that, you know, the wisdom of emptiness, whether it's going to be used fruitfully or in a very trivial way? So, if your mind is, if that wisdom of emptiness is not tempered by great compassion towards all sentient beings, then the danger is that this wisdom of emptiness might simply be used for one's personal liberation. Just one person's liberation, you know, then forgetting about the rest of the all dear, dear mother sentient beings, you know, simply thinking so selfishly about oneself. Very small. And then whereas, look, this can be used to benefit all sentient beings and yourself becoming a Buddha. So when you compare the, even in terms of one's personal interest, becoming Buddha and just a mere arahat, compare the two. You know, arahat just becomes so insignificant, like the fireflies in the eyes of the all shining, ever shining, all pervading sun, you know? So, like that, we should make sure that the emptiness that you cherish so much is going to bear enormous result by tempering, you know, that with compassion. And then meditate on patience. This is really very important for all of us. You know? Why? This is really very important. Partly it might sound a little bit awkward, but in depth, in real sense, it's really very, you know, meaningful. Say, if you have such a physical appearance of presence, you know, physical appearance of a great presence. Say, you are there, and everybody simply, who's that guy? You know, who's that? So, that kind of presence. So naturally then, there would be lots of people, you know, are coming to know about you. And because of which, you come in contact with many people. Among these many people, there are bodhisattvas. And what are these bodhisattvas going to do? You know, through their encounter, they will not talk about, oh, what is the next movie, and who's the hero in this, you know, movie. He's not about talk. He or she's not going to talk about that. Somehow, the discussions are going to hover around, you know, the emptiness, generosity, practice of empty, you know, the bodhicitta and these things. So then again, you see that from these people, you know, with whom you come in contact, you see that there are great numbers of bodhisattvas. And these people, these bodhisattvas, through, you know, come in contact with these, then you will get access to that precious thing which you have been cherishing so much in your past life. What is that? The wisdom of emptiness. Right? Mm-hmm. So, we need to. So, now how can it really happen? How can you really choose to have such a great presence in terms of appearance? So, this is through the practice of patience. So, whereas, say, if you are so, you know, if you have such the unattractive appearance, then, and also, you know, some people, they have a kind of physical appearance as though like always angry. Although mentally not, you know, but appearance. People get the impression that, oh, that person seems to be a little bit, you know, cross all the time. Then people tend to go away from you. You know, so this is because of you not having been